This is 4:45 on Monday, October 24th. Okay, so let me tell you about just the mechanics of how this works. I wrote in red, next to each problem on the original exam, how many additional points you got for your answer on the attachment. I then added up all those red points and wrote them on the first page of the original exam, and then I wrote a underline under it and I said divided by two, because I graded so that the total number of points would be like the original grading. Okay, so that was how that worked. My suggestion is that if the original red number without the divided by two plus the original score doesn't add up to something like 85 or more, then there are still some serious misunderstandings that ought to be dealt with, and you ought to come see me during office hours to figure out why that still is. But most people, you know, got sort of in that range, and that's fine. But there are a few people who didn't, and I'm concerned about those people, because often those were people who really needed all those points and didn't get them. So, yeah.
Was that 97?
I think it's out of 97. But so I figure, you know, if you have your books, you have your notes, you have all the time you need, then it should be possible to answer these questions. If it didn't happen, then okay. Let's see. What else? Well, I guess that's everything mechanical for the timing. Please log into Clicks. I did reset the log, so it should force you to log in, but we're not doing any questions this morning. I'm going to try now to tell you about select. I guess I need to switch so you can see my computer. I'm never quite sure with this. We talked about that on Wednesday. You have multiple file descriptors that your router application is running. You've opened them, you've bound them, as you're sending UDP messages on them, receiving UDP messages on them, and you have to be prepared to deal with the fact that you may get input on either one of those file descriptors at any given time. And you can't do a read on one of them or a receive on one of them, because if you did, then nothing would happen until you got that message from that one, and you need to be okay. So our solution to that is the select system call, and there are two aspects of it. First of all, just what does it look like, and how bad is this going to be? No, that's not too bad. I'm not sure I'm using the same names for these arguments as used in the actual man page, but that is okay. Really quite annoying that the tablet computer I bought in 2007 is way better than anything I could buy today for the purpose for which I want to use it. I won't say that they're better, that it was better overall, but for the purpose of doing lectures in class, it was just way better. It didn't have problems of detecting my hand as additional input or jumping around. Anyway. Okay, so select system call, this is the Unix version of it, and it takes a bunch of arguments, and we'll talk about what they are, because you haven't got the slightest clue what an FD set is, right? Or a struct time bell. You might know what an int is, but which int you're going to be passing is also important. Okay, so let's talk about these FD sets. FD sets are a representation of sets of file descriptors, and they are abstract in the sense that you only manipulate them with a particular set of macros. Where'd it go? So if I have declared FD set FDs, then I can do things like, see, it's wanting to jump around. All right, so the FD0 macro, you pass it the address of a FD set, and it essentially produces an empty set. It makes that set be an empty set. Okay? So it does whatever is necessary in that abstract representation to make it behave as an empty set. FD... The naming is just really not easy to speak, although it's easy enough to type. The all caps FD underscore set macro puts a file descriptor into a file descriptor set. And similarly, the FD clear macro takes the file descriptor out of the set. All right, so I told you it was an abstract representation, but given the names of these operations, what do you think the actual implementation is? Ready? Pulling in. No. Think back 20 years. C, operating system interface.
Is it an array?
It's an array of what? Simply. Bits. Right? It's an array of bits. And all you're doing is turning on and off the bit that corresponds to a particular file descriptor. Remember, in Unix land at least, file descriptors are small integers, so a bit vector of 256 bits or something like that is allocated for these, and it's indexed by the file descriptor. Okay? And it just gets turned on and off. But with those, you can treat it as completely abstract. You don't need to know the fact that it's implemented as a bit vector. You don't have to care. You just use the macros, and that's how it works. Yeah.
Is it implemented in, like, with the underlying features being in single bits? I thought like single bits weren't addressable in C. The smallest thing you could address was a
Right. The smallest thing you can address is a byte. So you have when you have a bit that is sort of when you're talking about the index of a bit, you have to do shifting and masking in order to affect a single bit. And that's what these macros do.
Okay.
And that's why it's important to always treat these things with the macros, because otherwise you're doing sort of really messy bit level programming. Okay, another one that's in here is FD is set. It's one if FD is in the set, zero if not. Okay, simple enough. All right, so you can put things in the set, you can take things out of the set, you can test if they are part of the set. That's pretty much all we need to know about sets. Any questions about file FD sets? Pretty simple. Next page. Page down. Add a page. So the next thing that was all right, where'd it go?
Is it the one above untitled page? On the right?
In. Maybe. Low battery warning. Now that's interesting, since the theory is that this thing is plugged in. Oh. It says that the pen has a low battery. We'll see how far I get. The 2007 version didn't require a battery in the pen. I'm sure it's a better pen, but yes, there we go. All right. That's how we do it. Okay. So the other thing that is here is this struct time val. Okay. So what's that all about? A struct time val is something that looks like this.
Okay.
So it's a representation of a certain number of seconds and microseconds in a struct. The time t type is essentially, I believe, a 32-bit unsigned integer. So you can put numbers in into those fields, and they represent exactly what you would expect, a certain number of seconds plus a certain number of microseconds. You might ask, what happens if I put more than a million in the microseconds field? And I'll say, I don't know, don't do that. I'm sure it's either formally undefined or it's defined to be the same number of seconds, but don't do that, right? Don't do that. That's not an appropriate use of the programming interface to do that. So just don't do that. Okay. Okay. So those are the types that are associated with this. And then, oh, now we have a new section. I don't want a new section. I want a new page. And then, what I didn't put on here. Yes, I did. It returns an int. Okay. So what is the meaning of that int? Zero if a timeout happened. Minus one, there was an error. Or the number of ready descriptors. Okay. So now that we know that, let's go back and look at select itself. So now I'll tell you what, now that I've told you all those things, I can tell you what select does. You specify a set of descriptors that you would potentially like to be able to do receive or read on. Another set of descriptors on which you would like to be able to do write. And another set on which you're waiting for an exception. Now, we're not actually going to use either one of these, so you're allowed to pass instead of an actual descriptor, the macro null. Right? It says empty set, and that's fine. Okay? So we're only going to be using the read descriptors. We have two of them in the project, so we will make an empty set that contains those two read descriptors, and we will also pass, and we'll pass null for the other two. And then we'll pass a timeout value, and we'll call select. And when select returns, if it returns zero, then we're going to do this thing that's specified for what happens when a timeout happens. If it returns, well, what are the other possibilities it could return? It could return minus one, right, in case of error. So we're going to check the error null field, the error null variable in that case. And we always, always, always check the return values from system calls, right? Right? We always do that. So we're going to check if that happened. And in the project, if that happens, you can just sort of bail out because it's not supposed to happen. So just say bail out. probably means you made some mistake in your code, and so you need to go back and fix it. So what possible values can
can it return? It can return 0, it can return minus 1, and what other possible values might it return?
Number of
file descriptors, and what are those possibilities specifically?
Once the max value.
No, I'm talking about what it returns. I'm passing in 2 file descriptors. What are the possible values that it could return?
0, 1, 2, minus 1.
Those are the only possibilities, right? In our case. If we pass a lot more file descriptors, it might be a much bigger number, but overall it returns, in our case, it will return one of those 4 values. Okay, so now what I didn't tell you yet is that, back to here, and also modifies the FD sets to indicate which FDs are ready. Right? That was the whole point. We wanted to find out which file descriptor could we call receive on. And so when it returns, it tells us how many are ready, but it also tells us which ones, and the way it tells us which ones is that it modifies these file descriptor sets. It leaves the ones set that are ready, and it clears the other ones. Leaves the ones in the set that are ready and takes out the other ones. Okay? So what do you think we have to do when this guy returns? We have to iterate through all the possible file descriptors. There are only 2 of them. We have to iterate through the file descriptors. We've been told that they're ready, so we need to do a receive operation. And it is required that you do a receive operation on a file descriptor that returns ready. You can't sort of just do one. You have to do all of the ones that said they were ready. You are required to do receive. Okay? So that's pretty clear. And we're going to write out the overview. All code for this in a skeleton here in a moment, which leaves us only with max desk plus 1. Something that always trips up programmers when using select. So remember I said, and we've discussed how Unix file descriptors are small integers, right? The number that goes here is the number corresponding to a file descriptor plus 1. And which number corresponding to a file descriptor? The largest file descriptor number that appears in any of these sets. So it's not the number of things in the set. It is actually the file descriptor number itself plus 1. Why? It is such a pain in the neck. Why did they do this? Why did they decide that they had to force the programmer to figure this out rather than just sort of accept it? Well, the answer is that the size of the FD sets actually cause cost to the kernel that has to sort of iterate through all of them looking for all the bits. And if you tell it the biggest one that it has to look for, then it can stop sooner. And this saves it, you know, at least a few thousand machine instructions, which might be a few
microsecond. Maybe it matters.
So way back when they defined it, of course, it was probably saving you a few milliseconds to do that. And so maybe it was worthwhile. But it is kind of a pain. So it's the value of the file descriptor, you know, like standard out is zero and standard in is zero and standard out is one and standard error is two. It's that number plus one for whatever things that you put in your FD set. Okay, so let's look at the overall pattern of this with a new page.
You heard about patterns in Computer Science 323, right? Design patterns? Somewhere, I hope. 322 maybe, depending. Okay, so here's the overall pattern that we're going to follow when programming with select. Okay?
A data structure containing all the file descriptors of interest. Remember, I said we're going to have to, after the thing returns, we're going to have to go through all the file descriptors and test whether they're ready. So we better know what they are. So for our little router program in the 2016 version, there are only two such file descriptors. In the 2015 version and previous, there were a whole lot more. Okay? So your data structure. This year may just be a couple of variables. Might be all that you need. But if before I made people use lots of file descriptors and they actually had to have arrays of file descriptors, and it was more complicated. But regardless, I'm talking sort of in the general case. What you do is you build a data structure containing all the file descriptors of interest. And on Unix, they can be regular or socket file descriptors, because sockets and regular file descriptors are just the same kind of thing on Unix. On Windows, they have to be sockets only. But, you know, our usual way of programming with this, even on Unix, is that they will just be sockets, too. So, that's fine. Okay. As you fill in the data structure, okay, so how do you fill in this data structure? I'll just interrupt that sentence for a second. Push that. How are you going to fill in that data structure? Well, you're going to be going through some process to create a bunch of sockets. And usually the easiest way to do this is just as you create the sockets, you fill in the data structure. Straightforward. As you fill in the data structure, keep track of the largest file descriptor seen. Okay. And then don't forget to add one to the largest when passing
select.
All right.
So that's how we get started. New page. So we'll do that, and then we'll say typically all this goes in a loop. Select. I forgot something. Eraser. 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 Yeah. Huh. Into our loop, we're going to process for a while. On every loop, use FD set to add each FD to the FD sets. Okay, now the appropriate FD sets. In our case, again, it'll just be the read one. We're not going to mess with the other two. So we'll add each of the file descriptors to the FD sets. We're going to initialize the timeout structure. And then we call res. We call select no. Okay. With me? Because we're not using those two. When it returns, okay, so now your process is going to essentially go to sleep, won't run anymore, until one of those sockets becomes ready to read. And so, or the timeout happens. So when it returns, we say if res is less than zero, error, bailout. Shouldn't happen. Yes?
So first point should be a loop in and of itself, right? Just to make sure.
That's what I mean when I say
use
to add each FD.
Okay.
Now, again, here you only have two,
right,
for your program, so maybe you just do them with two statements rather than a loop. But in general, it would be a loop. Initialize the timeout structure. Call res. Call select. Check the result. If it's less than zero, it's a What is this? In this case, process a timeout. Okay, so what are you going to do in your router when a timeout happens? Anybody remember? Yeah. You send out the your update message with your current distance vector to all of your neighbors. Right? So that's what you got to do for a timeout in this case. And then, typically, for in read these. Let's do it Python style, because I don't want to say a lot about the details of that. But again, iterate through all of your file descriptors, testing whether they're in I'll refine this a little bit. A button. I get it. Aha. In the set of all file descriptors, if FD is set, FD okay, then you do a receive or a receive from. We'll talk about receive from in a moment. And then do whatever is appropriate for that. Right. Now, one last thing. I saved this one for last because this one is kind of ridiculous. On some systems, but not all, select before it returns modifies the timeout structure to contain the remaining amount of time. All right. So, this is also a pain because depending on what system you're on, the behavior is different. So on Linux, where it does modify the timeout structure to contain the remaining amount of time, well, look here, if we look back over at our pattern, our design pattern for the while loop, where it says initialize the timeout structure, we really only need to reinitialize the timeout structure on the Linux system after a timeout occurs, because otherwise when you succeed in actually reading something, the amount of time has already been subtracted from the timeout. Okay. So you might be able to move, initialize the timeout structure outside the loop and then stick it inside the process of timeout in that case. Okay. You just say, set timeout to 10 seconds, you let it go when the timeout occurs, set it to 10 seconds again, and you're ready to go. On other systems, and I don't know the answer for Windows, whether this happens or not, the timeout structure is not modified by the select system call, in which case when it returns, it still says 10 seconds. Well, now some time has gone by, and you don't want it to be 10 seconds anymore. You want it to be shorter than 10 seconds. You want it to be 10 seconds from the last time that you sent out your update. So in that case, you have to keep track of it. So my desire for you in this assignment is that you treat it as the case where select does not modify the timeout, and instead you have to keep track of when you want the timeout to occur. Okay? And so you will be setting the timeout each time through the loop to the remaining amount of time before the 10 seconds are up. With me? So I call select, let's say 5 seconds go by, and then it returns one, and I do some receiving, and then I come around the loop again, and then I initialize the timeout to 5 more seconds. That's how much time is left. Assuming that all of this happens in very little time. You can calculate, you know, the kind of loop that you typically see is you have a variable that says, I want a timeout at a certain time. And then you get to this initialize the timeout place, you say, what time is it now? How much time is there until that certain time? Make that be my timeout. Okay? And when the timeout happens, you add the 10 seconds to what time do I want a timeout, and go through the loop. That's the general scheme. All right, that's select. Select has a friend named Pole, who has another friend named ePole, that do essentially the same thing with a slightly different interface. People will use them kind of interchangeably, but we're using select. Okay. Any questions about this? So there are a lot of little landmines in here, right? That's the thing that, like I said, when you're doing this assignment, it's overall not that hard, but there are some things in it that will sort of trip you up. So select is one of them. This issue about the max FDs plus one. The issue about needing to reinitialize the file descriptor sets at every iteration, reinitialize the time value at every iteration. You know, you just got to get working and program that stuff and get it right. Again, I suggest that you work on this in stages and get select, your select loop working without worrying about the sort of overall structure of updating routing tables or anything. Just get the communication going. Send messages, get a bunch of processes that all send messages to each other sort of periodically or randomly or something, and make sure that they wake up at the right time using your select table. Because the routing algorithm itself is tricky enough that if you get bogged down in that, you won't even be sending the right messages, and if you at the same time are trying to figure out why your select doesn't work, it's a big mess. Right? So get familiar with how select works. All right, I need to tell you about receive from, but we don't have enough time for that today, so I'll do receive from next time, and I'll tell you about some of the command line tools, at least on Linux, that are helpful in doing this project. They're not part of the project, but they're helpful. Okay? So I'm paying you back a couple minutes for the times that you stayed after today. I'll see you Wednesday. Anybody else need an exam? They're up here in front.
For the exam, you want to be when you ask us questions about the project and stuff like last time.
Uh-huh.
Are you going to do it in C or some other language?
Let me think about on the exam what to do. It would be on what I lectured on. So yeah, it'll be C.
Right.
I won't throw in strange languages that I've never talked about.
Dr. Hauser, so
yes.
I was absent for most of this last week, and I forgot to email you, letting
uh-huh.
you know
okay.
that I wouldn't be there for the first questions and everything.
Okay.
Is that a problem?
That's not a problem. But do send me an email.
Letting you know
just
that I was
absent. That you were absent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hello, sir. The exam.
Yeah.
So, no, it's not possible to take it early. And so that leaves us with what? You know, the exam has been on the schedule since the start of the semester, so if you made an appointment with your orthodontist over top of an exam, that's kind of your fault. However, I understand it's hard to get appointments with orthodontists, especially when you have to travel across state. So.
I tried Friday, but it had no time, so...
Yeah. Do you have time now to walk to my office with me?
Yeah.
Okay, let me deal with these other guys and we'll...
What should I do with my exam from here?
Okay. What's your name?
Nehemiah. Stay low.
It's there.
Oh.
Either that or somebody. Okay.
I'm for recording, so let's get that. That's all right. The ones so far are all benign. let me. What happened to my other one?